Blog Talk Radio.
Johnny Lang and these boys,
All I'm going to say is they should be on Robin Street down in the Big Easy and not down under in Australia, because they know how to rock it. They were going to come on the show tonight, but after they found out, and I found out, that it would cost them an arm and a leg and the promise of their firstborn if they ever had one, and selling their souls to the devil, they asked if they could beg off and if we would just run the show without them. And Chris and I are more than happy to do that. The Half Mile Harvest is the fourth release from the four-piece soul blues band, the Teskey Brothers. The album is independently produced, recorded, and mixed by the band's own Brendan Love and Sam Teskey at their home studio. And I'm going to probably mask up their town name, One Bite Vic. The album features an all-analog production utilizing a 24-track Studer 2-inch tape machine. These recordings feature the band playing live in a room together, including vocals. They did it old-style, ladies and gentlemen. The album is recorded and mixed completely analog with no computers, just like the boys' favorite artists did in the 60s and 70s. This result is a lush, classic, old-school-sounding authentic blues and soul record that will give you chills. In September of 2016, the Teskey Brothers released the first single, Pain and Misery, from the forthcoming album, and it was a great introduction to the album and has been well received both nationally and abroad. Pain and Misery earned airplay on PBS, RRR, Triple J, Radio National, and many more community radio stations, demonstrating the band's appeal to many demographics. And ladies and gentlemen, this band is the absolute bomb. When I first heard Pain and Misery, I was rocking and tapping, and I would have got up and slow danced if my husband could get up and slow dance. So with that being said, welcome, Chris. Let's do these boys right.
How are you tonight?
I'm good.
So...
you introduced me to these boys, so you tell me what you know.
I came across them while searching for other music, much like I do a lot of stuff. And much like you, living in Michigan and being around Detroit, having grown up during the 70s and the 80s, I have a deep appreciation for the Motown style, I guess. And this really kind of spoke to me in the sense that it has that old school kind of, Sam Cooke, Otis Redding, type of sound. And, I thought, much like you, hey, these guys have got to be from, Mississippi or Texas or someplace, after looking.
They're down south, but they really are down south.
Yeah, and after looking, I was like, it's a damn shame it takes four boys from the Outback how to show us how to do Motown soul.
I'm telling you. Jeez. Because when you said, Yvonne, they're from Australia, I went, there ain't no way. Because they need to be on the corner of Bourbon Street.
Yep. I thought they were from like Memphis or someplace like that, because this is a sound that it's a Beale Street type of sound. It's that, Beale Street is very well known for being the crossroads of where blues and soul and country meet. And again, it's Al Green and Sam Cooke and Otis Redding were all
B.B. King, Freddie King.
Yeah, those are all Memphis-based musicians who, thrived on what was known as the Memphis sound, Memphis blues or Memphis soul. They definitely...
what blew me away was... not only do they sing soul and blues, but they do it with a southern accent.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, the thing about soul and blues, regardless of where you're from, it's in your soul.
Yeah.
If you truly have it in your soul, the accent won't matter. It's, you know, there's amazing artists from all over the world who you would never know they were from the part of the world. There's a gentleman whose name is totally escaping me. He is from Israel. He's a Jewish guy. And just an amazing, amazing blues player who, you know, other than looking at him and obviously seeing the quote-unquote rabbi look, you would never know that he was Israeli. I mean, he literally sounds like Eric Clapton. And, you know, so it's, you know, you have a lot of great artists like Danny Kavanagh is from England. And, you know, he's an amazing artist who you'd never know. Joe Bonamassa is from New York. And, you know, you'd swear he played like he was Robert Johnson himself.
And it takes a special kind of person to be able to sing soul and blues with heart.
Yeah.
Because you have to have had life's experiences to be able to bring that song to give it life. You can't just sing souls and blues like you're singing a lullaby. It doesn't work that way. You part of you is in that song.
Right. I mean, you can sing the blues, and it's like any music. You can sing the blues and not connect to it, to do it.
Right.
To do it. But you have those select artists who absolutely pour their soul into it, and it shows. It shows in their voice. It shows in their style. It shows that it isn't just music for them, that they're literally breathing their life into that music. Beth Hart, for example, when Beth Hart sings, it's almost, you know, soul. It makes your soul cry because she's so emotional when she sings those songs.
Well, I'll tell you what, if I didn't know better, I would swear that the soul of Robert Johnson and Otis Redding is in all four of those boys, because they got something special.
In fact, it's the music that... Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I would say it's a music that you can tell that it's a music that they grew up on and that they love and that they enjoy. You know, that they're not just playing it because it's popular. They're not playing it because it's what will make them money. They're not playing it because it's what will get them famous. They're playing it because, you know, you can tell, again, like Beth Hart, they're pouring their very soul into these songs.
And that brings up a point. The boys started when they were mere teenagers. I mean, Josh was 14 and Sam was 13. Josh was already performing, and so Sam just gravitated. And then while most of the kids are outside playing, these two boys are playing music. They literally 24/7 are playing music, and it's not something they cannot do. They have to play.
Yeah, and it's more common now with the blues than ever before. I mean, you have a whole, unlike rock music or unlike country music or any other music right now, you have a whole new generation of artists that are coming up that started very young.
True.
Quinn Sullivan, these guys, you have, there's a young kid named Taz. You have Joe Bonamassa, who was 13 years old, sitting on, you know, B.B. King's guitar amps, basically, because B.B. mentored Joe Bonamassa. Albert King, you know, mentored Johnny Lane. So, you know, and Johnny is another one who was very young. He was 12 years old on his first record.
And the first time I heard Johnny Lane, I was with my sister, and we were traveling down the road, and the song came on. And I looked at my sister and said, "Sue, when did Eric Clapton put out a new album?" She said, "He didn't." I said, "Yes, he did. I've got everything but that one." She says, "No, that's Johnny Lane. He's only 16 years old." I said, "What?"
Yeah.
I said, "Are you sure?" She said, "Yeah, here's the case."
Yeah.
And it was, I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, like I said, there's a whole new generation of these artists who have, you know, taken this music to levels that it's a resurgence. It's a, you know, it's a much welcomed resurgence because they're bringing emotion and soul and feeling back to music.
That's why I think they have the souls of some long gone artists, because even Brendan, he started playing at the age of 11.
Yeah.
That's the third guy in the band. 11 years old, he starts playing. So, where have these kids been all their lives?
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, one of my favorite rappers, it's kind of a, there's a small little skit on one of his things between the songs. And it really kind of defines this whole thing. And he says, he's talking to an older blues guy. And he's like, "Sir," he's like, "how do I get into music?" And the old bluesman tells him, "Boy," he's like, "you don't get into music. The music gets into you."
Amen.
Yeah, and it perfectly sums it up. It's just, you find a way. You find a place to play. You find a way to play. And, it, you know, when you want to do it, you'll find a way to do it, whether it's music, whether it's art, whether it's painting or building cars. You know, if you truly...
It's just like the song Pain and Misery that we play at the beginning of the show. I could feel the pain and the misery and the hurt and the disappointment and the, if I could change it, I would. These guys make you, it's real. It's not a song anymore. It's real.
Yeah. You only sing songs like that by living them. You know,
yes.
And that's the thing. I mean, there are those songs throughout history. You can hear them and you'd be like, "Oh, that's a good song. That's a catchy song," whatever. And then there are those songs that you hear and you feel them to your very core. You feel the hurt, the heartache. You feel the pain or the anger or whatever emotion that they might have been conveying. Brad Paisley and Alison Krauss, when they "Whiskey Lullaby,"
mm-hmm.
you know, you can feel the emotion in that song.
And speaking of feeling, I want to play this one because we only have an hour show, so we get as many songs as we can. But this "I Love a Woman," I know you've heard this one. You've heard them all.
Yeah.
But listen to the. It's more than emotion.
Yeah.
myself some faith. Whoa. She scores me like an orphan, treats me like a clown. And when I need some lover, that woman can be found.
The first one you named, that's exactly what that sound is. That's a classic John Lee Hooker sound. So into. I mean, that's straight out of the John Lee playbook.
and the harmonica was crystal clear.
Yeah.
He played that harmonica like it was a part of his body. Amazing. Absolutely amazing these men are. They got to come to the States. They have to come to the States.
I'm sure they will. I'm sure at some point, you know, somebody's going to hear that record and, you know, they're going to think this would be perfect for this TV show or that TV show or this movie. And, you know, then they're going to want them in the, you know, international blues competition that is in Memphis, and, you know, it's a matter of time.
So. Well, you know, they started out singing covers. And they, when they were playing gigs as young men, they were playing covers. And then at some point, they decided they needed to come up with their own music, and they haven't looked back since. It wasn't until 2008 that the Teskey brothers solidified their current lineup with the addition of Lynn Goo. Now, he's on the drums, and Brendan Love on bass. Lynn, who would also meet the brothers at late-night jam sessions, and who played drums, certainly helped. Throughout their teenage years, Lynn and Brendan both attended the high school and would form a band of their own called Super Deluxe. The Teskey brothers and Super Deluxe would often play together, supporting each other and often mixing the two ones up, making the addition of Lynn on drums and Brendan on bass to the Teskey brothers just a natural progression. So these kids all knew each other. I'm telling you, these guys, they were meant to be together. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like I said, it's a resurgent sound that is becoming more abundant. And, you know, you're seeing more and more bands kind of do this style. You're seeing more bands that are going to this style as a music that they grew up on, as a music they love, and it's becoming a viable sound again. You know, vinyl has helped a lot because the sale of vinyl is very important, because this is the kind of music that is built for vinyl records.
Well, and for the people that don't understand, because, you know, we also are talking to a generation of kids that have synthesizers and all this other extra stuff, explain to them what it meant when they said that it's an all-analog production, and that they were recorded and mixed completely analog with no computers. And it's all, and the reason gives it the old school sound.
Yeah. That's basically meaning that they have somewhere found an old recording console, and they're extremely hard to come by, and they're very, very expensive. For example, Pink Floyd is currently selling the one that they used to record Dark Side of the Moon. And at auction, they say it's going to go for about $560,000.
Whoa!
Yeah, so you're talking a console that they're using probably cost them six digits or close to six digits. They're very hard to come by. Analog, reel-to-reel machines are tens and tens of thousands of dollars. So it is not an easy way to record. It is not a cheap way to record. But for a style like this, it is the correct way to record. And it just, again, shows that their love for this music goes above and beyond it just being a style to them. You know, they could have easily recorded this thing in Pro Tools, probably got close to the same sound, but again, there's just that little extra that it shows that they care. And to fans, you know, it's those little extras that are going to make them want to pay $30 or $40 to get a vinyl record, as opposed to an iTunes download.
Oh, I would pay it in a heartbeat.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I'm saying, you know, the vinyl industry is making a comeback. And, you know, for the first time in, I think, 30 years last year, over $1 billion in vinyl sales. So you're talking a growing industry. Six, I think there's six functional pressing plants in the United States currently. Well, seven now because Jack White just opened his in Detroit. But there are waiting lists of months and months for people. You can call any of them and say, hey, I got a record and I want to put on vinyl. And there's a 6-month waiting list
wow.
in these places to get to your record because the demand for vinyl is higher than ever. And
okay, boys, if y'all are listening to this show or listen to it in archives, get that album on vinyl because I'll be first in line for that.
Yeah, I'll guarantee you they probably have already, you know. Bands like this, it's the first thing they think of. It's old school, you know. Vinyl records for people that, you know, are not of our generation, were more than just music. You had the artwork, you had the inner sleeves, you had the lyrics, you had they told stories.
Yes.
You know, bands like Pink Floyd and Jethro Tull, Electric Light Orchestra, and you know, these their cover art were concepts. You know, they were masterpieces, and they spent as much time on the cover art as they did on the actual record. And, you know, some of the most well-known pictures in music history are old vinyl covers.
Yep.
Everybody knows Houses of the Holy by Led Zeppelin. Everybody knows Rumors by Fleetwood Mac. Everybody knows The Wall by Pink Floyd and Dark Side of the Moon and Uma Guma. You know, these are all records that, strictly based on their artwork alone, you look at it, you know, oh, that's Pink Floyd, that's, you know, Led Zeppelin, that's Electric Light Orchestra, that's Black Sabbath, that's Jethro Tull. You know, you knew before you even.
And I guarantee
it
you, when they go vinyl, their cover will be a killer cover.
I mean, that's what it's all about. Hotel California, for example. You see
oh,
a picture
yeah.
of Hotel California. You immediately
yep.
know that's Hotel California. you know.
But I didn't have to read it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and that's what's so great about vinyl. That's why it's endearing, and that's why people pay just ridiculous, unheard-of prices for old, rare records.
And before I forget,
right.
ladies and gentlemen, the name of the album is Half Mile Harvest. You can order it on, what did I tell you earlier? I know you can download it on iTunes.
Yeah, it's pretty much everywhere. It's
everywhere out there. Just look up the Teske Brothers, and they have two more albums. This one is their third one, and the songs that are on this album are also on the earlier albums. If you haven't gotten your music, get it. Chris, I'm going to play Cry and Shame because this one will literally rip your heart out, and we'll talk about it when it gets through.
Okay.
That's a crying, crying shame. You just blame me to me, woman. And that's a crying, crying shame. Since you've gone away and left me, honey, I've been crying with the pain. Oh, I do more than anything to feel your love just once again. kind of thing. To feel your love just once again. But that day it never comes, babe. That's why I'm crying with the pain. And you treat love just like a king. You're just like a little child, babe. And you treat love just like the wrong game. But you never really loved me, honey. That's why I'm crying with the pain. Yeah, I'm crying with the pain. Most every night and every day.
Gentlemen, I'm taking a trip down memory lane with Saturday Night Sock Hops, driving movies, cruising in the ragtops, be 16 again, doing the strolls, slow dancing, breakups, first loves, last loves. There's all of that rolled into that one song, right, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, that's a classic. I said earlier that the Memphis Soul Sound, that's a classic example of the Memphis Soul Sound, the Memphis horns. You know, that's a prime example of us. You know, if you had to define that style in a song, that would be it. I mean,
that's true, because the horns are very prominent in that song.
Yeah, that's a classic Sam Cooke style song. That's
yes.
You know, the horns and the emotion and the soul and the it's just you're sitting on the dock of the bay type of song.
Yes, absolutely. And when you listen to that song, you get a rush, literally a rush of past memories that you can't stop because they start dancing around in your head like a slow moving movie.
Yeah. And it's, again, you know, it's a style. It's a resurgence. There are a number of artists that are bringing this back, and they're doing it very well, and they're doing it in a way that, you know, it's not a money grab. It's not like, you know, it's not like, let's bring back punk or let's bring back hair metal. Let's bring back, you know, old country. This is a musical style in and of itself that it's just its really own sort of small universe, you know, that has its own sort of self-supporting system that is kind of separate of a lot of other things. And there's a lot of music that infuses soul, into it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'll hear blues and soul and rock, and you'll hear it in country, but you don't hear a lot of rock in this. You don't hear a lot of country in it. I mean, it's really kind of its own sort of multiverse in the sense that, you know, these artists live and die by this music.
Yes.
By the emotion in it.
And what they bring to it is you get, if I wasn't looking at a picture of these young men and how young they are, I would swear that they have lived an entire lifetime and their songs are their history of their travels and their journeys and their disappointments and their successes and their failures and their lost loves and things that they would like to get back but they can't. But these kids haven't lived long enough to experience all of that yet. But they got it. They've made it.
Yeah, you would think that, but you don't really know that. I mean, you don't know what kind of childhood they had or what experiences they might have had in life. And sir, it's probably a good bet that they haven't lived, you know, the life that a lot of the older artists did just because of the
let's think about the old blues artist. The old blues artist and the old souls artist came from very humble and poor backgrounds. Most of them, because they were brutal, and because most of them were black artists, they didn't have a Chinaman's chance of success. So they brought all of that past rhythm into their music, and it ripped your soul apart when they sang. Let's take Otis Redding, Sitting on the Dock of the Bay. When you listen to that song, you can picture this man who has nothing left, and he's sitting in the bay, on the dock of the bay, just watching the tide roll in and roll out. And apparently his life is in shambles. He has nothing left but to sit on the dock of the bay. And these guys bring that... They bring that history of those pioneers in blues, and so they bring that to the present in these songs.
Yeah, it's a reverence is what it is. It's, you know, when you love something, you always want to show a reverence to it. You want to, you know, you want people to know that, you know, this is special to me, so I'm going to put everything into it. I'm going to make it right. And again, going back to the way this record was recorded shows that reverence to them. Again, you know, they could have easily gone into their garage with a laptop and, you know, $200-$300 worth of a Pro Tool plugins and recorded this record.
Yep.
But they chose the route that was not only incredibly difficult, but incredibly expensive.
Yes.
You know.
I mean, a 2-inch tape machine?
Yeah. I mean, it's all but going to guarantee that they probably will not ever make their money back on this record. You know. But, again, it's a record that you can tell. This isn't about the money to them. This is about the pure blood, sweat, and tears of what this music is supposed to be.
Let's play till the sky turns black, because that would be our last song. Hold on a minute, and we'll talk about this one too, because this tells the story of what you're saying, that they put everything they had in it.
Thank you.
So what are your thoughts on that one, my friend?
That is, that's a old school traveling song, you know? That's that almost Roy Orbison type of sound.
Yeah.
You know, if you've ever heard old Roy Orbison, and it's got that kind of guitar sound in that. You know, almost that Lost Highway type of.
That's what I was thinking of as I was hearing it. I'm seeing these men that, for whatever reason, are leaving town, let's say. Maybe it's a lost love. Maybe they're looking for work. And they're hopping on the train.
Yeah.
And they're basically telling the town behind them, we won't be back until the sky turns black. So don't even look after us because we're gone.
Yeah, that's a type of song that would be great for an old noir style film, you know, like an old
yes.
David Lynch film or something.
Very, and I was thinking that about I Love a Woman, because I was seeing a noir film going off in my head of a smoky bar and a private detective looking for an errant wife or an errant husband or somebody missing, and he walks in the smoky bar and she's sitting alone at the bar. These guys just touch everything, every emotion, every visual. They are absolutely amazing group of young men. The Teskey Brothers, ladies and gentlemen, you've got to get their album, Half Mile Harvest. This, we haven't even touched all the songs on here yet.
Yeah. I mean, just a few examples. I mean, and again, you know, I want to throw a few other names out. If you like the Teskey Brothers, and they're an amazing example of this, what I, you know, what I've said is a resurgent sound. There are artists out there. Nathaniel Ratliff and the Night Sweats are very, very similar to the Teskey Brothers in sound and style. You guys might have heard them because they had a real popular song last year called S.O.B., which is a bit of a more of a Johnny Cash style, but overall, Nathaniel Ratliff is very much in that style. A band that has been around for a decade that has been largely and grossly not nearly as much press as they should have is a band from Georgia called J.J. Gray and Mofro. Again, an amazing bluesy, soulful sound. From Mississippi, there was an artist named Paul Thorne who, you know, was just emotional to the bone. He has some really kind of sarcastic, funny songs, too. There is a band from Buffalo, New York, called Wild Adriatic, who, you know, have fused the old soul and the new kind of rock and roll style. It almost sounds like Bob Seger and Sam Cooke got together.
Wow.
For a band. And there is a band from California that I just discovered recently called Achilles Wheel, that, you know, kind of like Wild Adriatic, mix the kind of old blues and the rock and roll, almost a Jerry Lee Lewis type of sound of going back and forth between the Memphis soul and the kind of real raucous, you know, piano type of stuff.
Everybody loves Jerry Lee.
Yeah, there is, again, a resurgence of the sound of artists that are really doing it justice. You can tell these guys are not just doing it for the money, because it's music. Nobody's doing it for the money anymore. If you're doing it for the money, you're either insane or you're stupid.
Or both. I'm insanely stupid.
Yeah.
I'm stupidly insane. I mean, what did he have there?
Yeah, the old AC/DC song used to say, it's a long way to the top if you want to rock and roll. These days, you know, it's a long way to the, you know, it's a long way to the bank account if you want to rock and roll. Because, you know, artists just aren't getting paid the way they should, and it's ridiculous. And there's no easy solution that's going to change it. You know, vinyl is going to help because there's money in vinyl. You know, you can,
if the managers and the recording companies and everybody doesn't screw them over like they did during the Motown era and during the early country and western era where they got pennies on the dollar.
Yeah, and there's no need to anymore. You know, the amazing thing about being able to do like this, what we do, one of the things in on the artist side of it, the internet has opened it up that artists really don't need record companies anymore.
That's
they don't
true.
Need big A&R people. They don't need you can hire. I have tons of friends now who do promotional work, and they do it for a tenth of what it would have cost them back in the day. And you cut out that middleman. You record your product, and then you build a website, and you take it to, you know, PR guy A or PR guy B, or sometimes there's three or four of them, depending on if you're marketing to Japan or America or Europe. And they get it to labels. They get it to people like us to play. And you really have the power of the internet. Fan bases can be built guerrilla style, almost.
That is very true. They don't have to go and beg radio stations to play their music because they have us who have online radio stations, and we reach a broader audience.
Yeah, and depending on how you work it or what your gimmick is, if you have a gimmick, you know, one viral video hit can blow you up. The group that you've seen recently that I knew about for a while, the Brothers Movie. The one that did the Cab Calloway song, you know, it took one video of them performing in Union Square in New York 6 million views, and now everybody knows who they are. And that's just it. You literally can make or break yourself with the power of the internet.
That is very, very true.
Yeah, I just interviewed Backwards. He's a libertarian rap metal artist who they've had numerous record contracts thrown at them, and he refused to sign them. He said, I'm not giving away my publishing. I'm not giving away my rights to my songs. I will do it my own way. And he has continually just pushed and pushed and pushed this, and now has a following of tens of millions of people. Every time they put a video out, you know, it's like 20, 30 million. And he's making as much money creating YouTube videos for his songs as he will do for any record label. You know, every time he puts a video out, he gets this X number of hits, and he's making $80,000 to $90,000 just off
wow.
the YouTube video.
Well, we are fixing to run out of time, my friend. Our hour is abating. We are down to 1:45. I know. It always does this with you and I. So don't hang up when the show goes dead, because I'm going to talk to you for a minute. Ladies and gentlemen, Wednesday night, join us when I have Deborah Lowe's family on my show. We will be discussing Her Murder by Gerard Schaefer, who was Florida's first serial killer. She is in my book, Silent Scream. And after 35 years, her family is going to go public with their story. It's been a long time coming. So join us on Wednesday night at 8 o'clock here on Off the Chain. Look up the Teske Brothers. Look up their music. Buy their music. Support them, because these guys are absolutely magnificent. You will kick yourself if you don't.
Yes.
And I have to tell you, as I do with every show, that at the end of your days, don't be that person. Be like the Teske Brothers. Don't be that person that says shoulda, woulda, coulda. If I had my life to live over, I would do such and such. You're living now. Don't make the excuses that I hear so many times. Well, I don't have this or I don't have that. You see what the Teske Brothers did with a 24-track Steel 2-inch tape machine in their house without a sound studio. They made it happen. And then continuing to make it happen. So don't be that person. Love yourself, be yourself, dream big, make the dream real, and be here on Wednesday night at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time for Off the Chain. Until then, we say failure is never an option. Okay, so now we're off the air. I thank you so much, my friend, for co-hosting with me. I appreciate it so much.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Well, you're going to be on the road. I know, but you're going to be on the road. You're going to be on the road. On the road again.
I am.
That's true. That's true. Even if you're driving down the road, you'll be my co-host as you're hauling 18-wheelers over the road.
Right, I'll call you from the highways of America.
Well, what I'm going to do when the show goes up in archives, I'm gonna, when I put it up, I'm going to tag you in it, and I'm going to tag the boys in it, too. So you can use it whatever way you want to use it. If you want to add it to your show, whatever you want to do, if you want to use parts of it, whatever you want to do, feel free.
Yeah, I'm getting a new laptop, and, you know, class is only 7 to 5, so I'm going to have every night to kind of work without distraction like I mostly can't do here.
I understand that. Trust me, I understand
you know, I'm going to catch up a lot of this stuff that I've kind of let slide the past couple weeks, because, like I said, it just never seems to be enough time in the day lately to
Well, don't sleep at night. Put the kids to bed, put the wife to bed, and you don't sleep at night. I don't sleep at night. That's when I get a lot of work done.
Yeah, I try, but it's, I don't know, I'm just so easily distracted, I think, by everything else, you know, the TV and the neighbors. And I'm kind of looking forward to, as bad as that sounds, I'm kind of looking forward to being in a hotel room for a month to just, you know.
I understand that. I'm seriously thinking about running away from home and moving to a foreign country and changing my name. And when I say that, the children and the husband say, where are you going and what are you changing your name to? That's the whole purpose.
Yeah.
I'm not telling you.
Yeah, exactly. Move to Thailand somewhere in the forest, you know?
Yeah, way out in the middle of nowhere. Or put me on a cruise ship in the middle of the ocean. That would work. Now they would find me. They'd send the helicopters after me. Can't do that.
I used to tell my ex-wife all the time. I used to tell her all the time. I said, you know, if you piss me off, I can go back to the Philippines. And
there you
she's, like, oh. She's like, well, what makes you think I couldn't find you in the Philippines? I'm like, there's 8,000 islands in the Philippines. Good luck.
Let me know how it works out for you. Well, my friend, I'm going to get off of here and end the episode, get this thing up in archives and get it over to you. And you're leaving Monday, right?
Yeah, theoretically, I should be leaving Monday afternoon. You know, that's all contingent on that we get our taxes back in time and actually have the money for food and gas.
I understand, man. I get you. The struggle is real.
Yeah, it's, trust me, I have every intention of being there on the 13th. You know, we're moving my mom down Saturday into her new house. Her new house, she's moving just around the corner from
there. Oh, good.
So she's going to be here to kind of babysit for Heather and help with the kids and all of that. We're getting her a brand new 3-bedroom house. Nobody's ever lived in it, you know. So it's brand new everything after, you know. She wanted to stay down there, and I was like, look, you don't want to live in this old house that Larry died in. You know, the memories are just going to overwhelm you, and you don't have anybody down there. And you
just
know,
come on up and be with us.
Yeah, you need to just come up here where the kids are. You'd be just, you know, you have your grandkids and you have me, and, you know, you'd be closer to the casino. There's a bingo hall right up the street up the road that you can go to. You know, you love to play bingo. And she's like, well, I don't have the money for a deposit. And I'm like, you know what? I'll pay the deposit. Just pack your shit, okay? Stop giving me excuses and pack your shit. You're moving out of that busted ass house.
And coming out here. All right, my friend, I am out of here.
All right. You have a great night, sweetie.
You too. Thank you again, darling. We'll talk later.
Absolutely. Bye bye.
All right. Good night. Yay! I got it to work.